Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence Development Incorporated. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. In our last episode, I started a conversation with Jim Kouzes about their newly revised book, Credibility, How Leaders Gain It and Lose It, Why People Demand It. We continue that conversation in this episode, so enjoy.
You know, you also mentioned confidence as part of these, and I've seen this show up in a couple ways recently. In LinkedIn, you know, people can put up questions, and this one guy put up this question. It was basically like, I'm over my head. I don't have the experience for this project that I've been assigned to. My boss won't help me. I'm afraid to tell him I can't do it. I'm freaking out. What should I do? I mean, he had this giant no confidence mark on his forehead there. So if you're coaching this guy, Jim, knowing that how important confidence is, or just even just overall, what questions or advice come to mind?
Well, two things come to mind. First of all, I'd want to talk with that person about a very simple little matrix I sometimes draw with people when we're doing training and coaching. And if you can imagine on the vertical axis is challenge. So challenge from low to high, and on the horizontal axis is your skill and ability. And in certain situations, we might find that we have low skill and low challenge. And when I have low skill and low challenge, how do I feel? How do people feel? Well, they kind of feel probably a little bored, maybe a little anxious. How do you feel?
Taking up space.
Yeah, you know, there's just nothing in this environment that's moving me forward, and I really don't have much skill either to handle the challenge, to be in this situation. It would be rare, but it would be like a new employee who's, you know, doing very menial tasks, right? It's not engaging right. People. But how do you feel when the challenge is high and your skill is low? Challenge is overwhelmed, scared. How do you feel when your skill is high but the challenge is low? That's when you really feel bored. And so there are lots of different places on this dimension we can feel. The ideal would be high challenge, high skill. You know, I'm involved in something that really pushes me to do my best, and I have the competence to do that, and that's when I feel at my best at work. So the ideal scenario is to make sure that we find that when we take on a new task, that we do an assessment of our skills and abilities and ask ourselves, you know, do I have the skills to fit this situation? And if I don't, just keep in mind that the number one characteristic that people look for in a leader is honesty. You can't fake competence if you don't have it. So it's best to say in that situation, go to your manager and say, I don't have the skills to do this, but I can learn them. I can learn them. Here's what I need. And I've been doing some research, and here's where I've identified where I can get those skills. I need your support to do that. My guess is that any good manager, 9 out of 10 times, is going to say, thank you very much for letting me know. I really appreciate it. Let's work together so I can help you gain the skills and abilities so you can do this job well and not feel overwhelmed.
But you know how some people feel like, I can't be that honest with my boss? You know, I can't, I'll look bad. And yet, how much better do we look if we actually go about it the way you said?
Well, it's a tough dimension. Credibility is defined as being able to do what you say you will do. And so you make a commitment to do something, and then you feel, oh my God, I can't execute on that because I don't have the skills and abilities. And there you are feeling like, if I admit, I say I can't do it, I'm going to lose my credibility. And so consequently, we all feel reluctant. But just keep in mind that the number one quality of an exemplary leader, somebody people would willingly follow, is honesty. And sometimes, you know, you're going to have to say, I don't know how, but I can learn.
And maybe this doesn't happen very often, but I can think of a guy I'm actually relatively close with. He has the credo in sense of a vision, he has what he needs, even in the competencies,
mm-hmm.
but the guy so lacks the confidence. And we keep trying to tee the ball up and let him take a swing at it, but he won't take a swing. He just doesn't think he can do it. I would rate him high on the skill and abilities. And the challenge is good, but he won't take the swing. His confidence is low. And I took from your book that, listen, if you don't have the confidence, you are going to actually hurt the team if you don't acknowledge that. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that you have to be able to take that swing, as you say. There's a wonderful little example of a softball coach we know who had a group of young kids who were just learning to play softball. And when she pitched the softball at these young girls, they would kind of wince, you know, and just grab their hands to their head, and they wouldn't want to swing at it, right? And so what she did was, first of all, you take that little pole and that plastic pole that bends, and you put a softball on top of it, and you hit it. And then she put a smiley face on the softball, and she said, I want you to tell me the color of the smiley face. She painted them different colors, you know, and don't swing at it, just tell me what color it is. And then the next thing that she did was she said, okay, now, you know, as you're telling me the color, I want you to swing and hit the ball. Well, eventually they were swinging and hitting the ball regularly, and they weren't wincing and drawing back and putting their hands to their head. They were enjoying it and laughing. So what she did was something all good leaders do. That is, they do take incremental steps in a situation where they're not willing to take that swing, as you describe it. And so you're going to have to take try to do something that's a little step in that direction, so that you begin to make some progress, and that progress will then give you increased confidence to do the next level of that challenge.
Great point and great story. You know, here's a credibility situation I hear occasionally from you, whether a coaching client or just listeners. They're tasked as a leader to execute against a decision that they don't agree with. And their concern is that their credibility is on the line when they have to lead in a direction that they oppose. So what suggestions do you have for them?
Well, the scenario that you paint here is something that probably all of us have faced, that we're asked to do something that initially our reaction is, you know, we don't want to do it that way. So I ask people to think about two different types of feeling that this is something that I oppose. First of all, are you morally opposed to this? Are people asking you to do something that violates a deeply held belief? In those circumstances, the answer about what to advise this person would be very different if it's violating a personal creed, and they would feel like if they were executing on this, they would be violating their own values and beliefs. They would be doing something they'd consider immoral.
Yeah.
Or is this a situation where you simply don't agree with the way in which the decision is being the way in which the decision is being enacted? So those are two very different kinds of advice. And I think the first step is to ask ourselves, am I opposed to this because I'm morally opposed to it, or it's just simply I don't agree with the decision, the way in which this is being executed? If it's the former, then you really need to go back to the fundamental values and beliefs and have an exploration and have a conversation. Again, we go going back to the whole process of earning and sustaining credibility. It is about relationships. It is about shared values. I need to sit down and have a conversation with my manager one-on-one privately and say, you know, I find this personally, you know, this violates. And you're asking me to work on a day when I told my family I would be there. And I made that commitment to my family, and I cannot continue to work all these hours and at this time because I promised my family. And this is really a violation of a deeply held personal commitment, and I can't do that. We need to work something else out. I strongly believe that we will never go wrong if we have those honest conversations. We'll feel good about ourselves, and the other person at least will have an understanding of where we're coming from. On the other hand, if it's something that I object to simply the methodology or the process, then I need to have a sit down and say, you know, I know we made this decision, and while I will execute on it, if that is the best way to go about this, I'd like to suggest that there's some other ways. And I didn't want to bring this up in public, but I do think, you know, I'd just like to share with you a few other alternatives, things we could look at. There are times when, you know, in all organizations, we may think we have a better answer than our boss, than our manager. I think we have to have that conversation, and then if it is still something, it's a methodology, not necessarily the morality, then we may have to go ahead and lead other people, even if we would say, well, I think there's another way we could have done this. On the other hand, if I feel strongly that this is going to lead us off a cliff, if this is going to get us into trouble, then, as Winston Churchill said, part of courage is the ability to stand up and speak. And we need to stand up and speak.
I think two errors I've made, especially early in my career, and I see other people make, is not having that conversation, just assuming that I don't have a voice. And so not developing or influencing skills to have that. I appreciate Bob Sutton's advice, argue like you're right, but listen like you're wrong, mm-hmm. because that's actually, I suppose, another error is that I thought my way was the best, but once I listened long enough, I actually found that maybe the boss's way was right. We perhaps out of arrogance sometimes thinks we have it right. But the other one was, the other mistake I've seen too often, Jim, is I would go back or I see other people whine about it in front of their teams about their boss. Oh, they wouldn't listen to me, or this safety stuff is so stupid, or you shared an example of that in the book of how that can be demeaning to the team and actually hurt our own credibility, not only, as well as our bosses, I suppose.
Absolutely. I love that statement from Bob about argue like you're right, but listen like you're wrong, because listening is an important part of earning and sustaining credibility.
Yeah. You make that point great in the book. So, the latest poll numbers out of Washington, D.C. would indicate there's some credibility issues with our national leaders. So let's say a leading member of Congress came up to you, and maybe this is difficult to do in the abstract, but without knowing this specific situation, but someone wants to increase his or her credibility. What are some suggestions, just top of mind, a couple key ones?
Barry and I were talking about this not just last week when we were together in Chicago. What I'd ask them to do would be to read the chapter on Affirm Shared Values, and credibility is a place before we had this conversation. And I tell them to pay particular attention to the story at the beginning of that chapter, where we tell this old tale from Africa and Nigeria about a villager named Modupe who burned down, to tell the story very shortly, to tell the end of the story, who burned down his own house in order to save the villagers from a flood.
Because they would come running to help him because he had so much credibility.
So sometimes we have to take a look at what is the greater good, saving the village or burning, or saving our own house or saving our own skin. And it's important that we enlarge the circle of the relationships here and say, we are about the greater good. One of the things we talk about is that shared values are the foundation of building productive and genuine working relationships. And while credible leaders have to honor the diversity of their many constituencies, they also have to stress their commonalities. And so if I'm just focused on one constituency and not thinking about all of the other many constituencies who might not agree with me, I need to then look at what are our commonalities, what are our shared values and shared beliefs, and how do we come to a solution that is inclusive, not exclusive, not just taking one particular hardline point of view. Each and every member of an organization certainly has their own unique needs, and we have to attend to those. But to function as a group, team members must have a strong sense of values and norms that bind them together. So my advice to people in Washington would be to look at what brings us together, not what separates us. Where can we come to agreement on what brings us together? Because if you look at the poll numbers, what the American people want is for Washington to come to agreement on something that will work to solve the problem, not continue to fight over who is right, which particular point of view is the right point of view. They want to see something where people can come to some kind of agreement that is inclusive of multiple constituencies. All leaders have to do that. In a very diverse world, which is coming even more diverse globally, we have to have that ability not only to listen to our own values or listen to one group's set of values and beliefs, but listen to all of those and have the skill and ability to find within that some commonality on which we can all agree.
Whenever I get frustrated with national politics, I try to remember the quote. I think it was John Galsworthy, but it says something like, idealism increases in direct proportion to your distance from the problem. So it's pretty easy for us to be idealistic when we don't have to cast
the... Well, that's a great quote. I'll give you another one. You know, we talked about Winston Churchill earlier about saying that courage is the ability to stand up and speak. But then he followed that by saying, and courage is also the ability to sit down and listen. And what I would say to people in Washington is sit down and listen.
In fact, it's interesting you say that. I've got that same thing written right here as a follow-up, is that I think that quote could actually be turned around, where the distance from the problem sometimes as leaders, whether it's at a national level or just, let's say, in a corporate, it's too easy to be in the office or in meetings and not visible. I really like how you guys stress in the book being accessible. It's a relationship, right? And even though there are electronic ways that we may think we're connecting with people, we have to listen. We have to be there. People have to know us. And the same thing applies there. So, Jim, you know, you've learned so much about leadership in the decades of research and writing. And yet my experience is there are times where I have trouble practicing what I preach, so to speak. So of all that you write and teach about, what is it that you struggle with? What is it that Jim Kouza struggles with when you have to lead?
Yeah, you know, as educators, I love the comment from St. Ignatius, who is a Jesuit, and because Santa Clara University is a Jesuit, we would often be reminded by our Jesuit colleagues there that St. Ignatius once said, "To know and not to do is not to know." To know and not to do is not to know. So, you know, one of the things that Barry and I were always reminded us, you can write about this, but you really don't know it until you can do it. And one of the great fortunes that Barry and I both had, Barry was dean of the business school there for a dozen years, so he had a lot of opportunity to practice running a multi-million dollar organization and raising $40 million to build a new building. So he is well equipped to talk about these issues from experience. And I ran a company for a dozen years, consulting and training company. So we both had that kind of experience. And I think that there are two things when you ask that question, Andy, that come to mind. One is, I struggle, as all leaders do, with the practice of inspiring a shared vision. That is the thing that is most difficult to do, particularly in adverse times, keeping that hope alive, understanding that there's a better future out there, that you know, if we take the long view historically, that we understand that things will improve, and we have to continue to articulate that, even though right now, today, it may seem like we're not making any progress. And the second thing is, in adverse and difficult times, I just need to constantly remind myself that I'm not in this alone, that we're in this together, and that together we solve these problems, and it's not a problem that's just mine alone. So as a leader, I need in times like this to actually engage with people more, not less. Those are two things that I just need to remind myself of all the time.
You know, and for me, I guess there's so many. There's a virtual smorgasbord of things I think I struggle with in this area. But there are times where the do what I say I will do. I mean, generally speaking, it's a high priority for me. But when that change happens or something that makes requires a diversion to the plan, I'm a master at rationalizing. And sometimes I underestimate the importance of helping people understand the why behind the change or why it didn't do what we said. And so I am constantly challenged by what I think you say is really what the behavior of credibility is. We must do what we say we will do. And if we don't, we better make sure it's clear on the why behind it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jim, it's a real pleasure to talk to you today. For those who are listening, want to improve your ability to lead, I highly recommend you get a copy of Jim and Barry's newly revised book, Credibility, How Leaders Gain It and Lose It, Why People Demand It. I also recommend you check out the additional resources for the book available online. You can find links to the book and other resources in the show notes for this cast. Jim, thank you so much for joining us on the People and Projects podcast.
My pleasure, Andy. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today.
Make sure to check out the links in the show notes to get your copy of Jim Kouza's and Barry Posner's book, Credibility. I've also put some links to resources that Jim and Barry offer online. So what's an example of how you've seen a leader gain or lose credibility lately? You know, what's your takeaway from this discussion with Jim? Stop by our podcast Facebook page and share your insights. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast. Have yourself a great week.
I never actually heard how you and Barry kind of divide and conquer, how you guys do it, but I...
It's been a partnership since 1981, and we've found a way, I guess, to make that work, like lots of long-term relationships. His mother, I saw his mother at the wedding of Barry and Jackie's daughter, and his mother refers to us as his second marriage, so it's jokingly, but our spouses sometimes feel the same thing, but yeah, it's been a good relationship.
Well, based on the time I got your email last night, it had to end late last night, too.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm burning the candle at both ends. Not a good practice, but
yeah.
Times when scheduling is what it is right now, it's what's happening.
Yeah, well, you know, that makes it extra special that you've carved out time for this. I appreciate it. You.
You're very welcome.